Men, do you ever feel like you just can't get ahead? Like you're misunderstood? Like you have no one to talk to that truly hears you?
And women, are you often frustrated, hurt, and saddened in your relationships with the men in your life?
What if there were a community of like-minded men going through the same challenges that would support, hear, and understand what you're going through?
Working together in unison to create understanding, intimacy, and strong connections. That's the Way of the Illuminated Warrior.
Way of the Illuminated Warrior Talk Show is a forum of candid conversations for men and women about men. Heard every Thursday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Being a man today is not always easy. Until now.
Hello there, everyone. This is Waska. I am here with Beth, and we are doing our holiday episode today. So it's I came up with the name Holiday Cheer or Holiday Fear, which it's kind of cutesy, but the fear, I don't know if the fear is really apropos. I was thinking maybe the opposite of what happens than cheer is holiday stress. So I don't know if you've had this experience. Like before I moved down south, the holidays that I observed were pretty stressful for a lot of people being up in New York between the shopping and the, well, I don't have enough money to buy 7,000 gifts for my whole family and the traffic and the traveling and all that. In New York, it seemed to be a lot more pervasive. Down here, maybe it's just my new lifestyle, new community seems to be a lot more chill. And we've had, I'd say, well, I will say more Friendsgiving little holiday parties in the last 2 weeks, and I'm going to one tomorrow night, or actually tonight, than I've had in New York in the longest time. So I don't know what that's all about, but what's your take on this whole holiday vibe?
That's a good one. Well, I'm glad you chose this topic, Waska, because it covers a lot of different layers. and I suspect for, at least for myself, and I suspect for a lot of our listeners as well, it's wrapped up around memory. So you just spoke about a memory of when you lived in New York State and what the holidays felt like that for you. I think all of us have some very distinct memories, and I beg anybody not to have some good ones and some bad ones. There's got to be a bit of both. I was born and raised in a really small town in southwestern Ontario. There was no one in my town of 3,800 people that wasn't Catholic. So French Canadian Catholic. So we were hardcore. Jesus is coming, kind of. We were hardcore. Right?
What does that look like?
Very intense. Very, very intense. And you know, all the nativity scenes, the scene of Mary and Joseph and the baby and all that, they all had to be perfect. It was almost like a competition. My mother would send my brother and my sister and I to our little friend's house to see what their nativity scene looked like compared to our nativity scene. It was like a beauty pageant of nativity scenes. And I remember finding that very, very odd because I thought they all looked kind of cute. All of them looked really, really cute to me. So I have a predominantly heavy feeling around the holidays as a child, but as an adult, I created my own festivities because I'm really good at gift giving. I'm really good at decorating for fun. I'm really good at cranking the radio and listening to music. Yes, including Christmas carols. I love them. So I've created my own vibe. And when I had my children, I vowed that I was never going to send them down that rope, that I was going to, as best I could, create positive, life-affirming memories for them wrapped around Christmas. So I'm really proud of where I'm at now in my spiritual evolution compared to what I was raised with. So,
yeah, I was raised in the Jewish faith. So we celebrated Hanukkah. Mm-hmm. I actually did a Zoom call with Jonah and Kyle, my oldest and youngest, last night. And we just, you know, we lit the candles and sang the songs and all. And I don't, I don't light the candles by myself, because for me, it was really always about the kids. In the beginning, when they're real young, because it's 8 days of Hanukkah, there would be presents, you know, small to, you know, cool and fun things when they were younger, you know. And then as they got older, it's like, you're not getting 8 gifts, you know.
You're not going to get an iPad and an iPhone and a MacBook. And a
Exactly. Yeah. Back then it was like the Nintendo DS and all this other stuff. But so yeah, it was really, really more the sentiment for me celebrating the kids, and it was really important to my dad, and he really liked doing candles and doing the prayers together and all. So even when I wasn't living in the area or we couldn't connect, we would do it over the phone. You know, he was never on Zoom. He's gone like 6 years now, so he never experienced the Zoom phenomenon. But you know, it was really more about connecting for me, family wise, in that way, just. It was a traditional thing, you know, so.
And was your children's mother practicing the Jewish faith as well?
About as much as I was, yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah,
cool.
Which is interesting because we were considered like reform Jews, which is like, you know the tradition, you know the religion, you go to Hebrew school, not all women or young girls were bat mitzvah. Most boys were bar mitzvah, and that's considered like the Jewish rites of passage. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, 13 years old, I do remember back, you know, you're supposed to be a man. Like,
wow.
I wasn't a man at 13 or even 23. So, you know, interesting traditional type of stuff that was going on there. And really what I remember most about 13 is my voice was changing. Yes, that was my big rites of passage.
I wonder if that had something to do with it. Back in the day when they created, however they read about that, if that was part of it, like because your voice changes, you become a man. I don't know. Interesting.
I think they needed more men in what they call a minion, maybe. I don't know if that's actually true. So the minion is you have to have 10 men in the Jewish faith to conduct the ceremonies. So, of course, there's little loopholes, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Probably get in trouble for saying that for my Jewish brethren. But anyway, you're supposed to be bar mitzvah to be considered a man, to have that minion of 10 men to do the ceremonies. And they also had this... I don't remember exactly what it really means, but it's like after your bar mitzvah, they would say, and now you're a fountain pen. And it had, which was always like really weird. It had something to do with, I think it was, that was like the gift, like back in the Stone Ages or whatever, they would give like a fountain pen to the kid, the young boy who became a man. I'm not sure if that's the exact deal with it, but it was something like that. It was always all these things. I like, what does that mean? Now I'm a fountain pen. Now I'm a man. I'm like, I don't resonate with any of this. I'm a little boy whose voice is changing, and I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
Did you feel the pressure of it all, though? Because I've heard that a lot of bar mitzvah children coming up to it, they feel a tremendous amount of pressure because you have to read from something, don't you?
Yeah, you read from the Torah, called your Haf Torah, which relates to the portion of where it is in that time of the year and all. So really the pressure for me was that my voice was changing and cracking and all. And I recall that I loved to sing because I was in the you know, chorus and I guess I was in junior high. Yeah, junior high at the time. And I'm like, yeah, singing is cool. And I, you know, started playing guitar, which I still play guitar. You could see one of them in the background.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There. But my voice, oh, gosh. I wish I had a voice. It's, yeah, you know, anyway, we wish you a Merry Christmas. So I could actually do the deep voice. I could do my Barry White voice. Or I could do my really high voice, you know, when I'm singing. There doesn't seem to be a happy medium when I'm singing there. So, and I know music, so I know when it doesn't sound good. So I will sing when nobody's around. I'll play guitar in front of you, but singing is, have to be in the festivus mood. Yes.
Right. Gotcha. That's a good story. Do you get bar mitzvahed on your actual birthday, or is it around your birthday?
It's supposed to be like on or after.
Okay.
You know, 'cause the Jewish calendar is different. It's not a... it's not the Gregorian calendar. It's a lunar calendar. So yeah, okay. It's supposed to be around that time. That's part of the traditions and all. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
So were you a Seinfeld fan?
I love Seinfeld. I love Festivus.
The Festivus for the rest of us. Yes. So when in doubt, we celebrate Festivus. Yes.
You know what? I just recently saw that, because you can watch Seinfeld 24/7, right? It's on some kind of platform all the time. And I recently saw that episode made me laugh. It doesn't matter how many times you watch it either. Oh, yeah. You laugh just the same, right? It's so hilarious.
Absolutely. Well, I love it because, I mean, I love Seinfeld anyway, but it just really makes light of the stressful parts of the holiday season. So I think that's a good kind of metaphor for, like, hey, let's just chill out and have some fun with it. And because really, isn't that what it's supposed to be about? You know, families coming together and having some good conversations, some good food, some connections, some presents. But there's, you know, again, growing up in New York, and again, I don't know if it's demographics or whatever, but there just seemed to be so much stress around the holidays.
Like the whole, yeah. Well, the whole gift giving thing does have a life of its own, and kind of has its own momentum that can, not always, but can turn into quite the monster. And then you deal with, well, let's just be frank and let's just be real. You deal with the big credit card debt that comes in January, and it's all over. Like, your kids have already played with everything. Your kid, you know, everything's, all the sweaters have been put into the drawers, and then you're stuck with your $1,000 Visa bill or whatever, right? That's hard work. It's hard work, you know, because you and I are very interested in our spiritual growth, to be mindful during the holiday season. Do I really want, is this the gift for that person? Is this the gift for that person? Is it reasonable for me to spend this amount of money on this gift for that person? It requires a lot of, just mindfulness. I'm repeating myself, but it requires us to be mindful of what we're doing, even to the point of overeating or overdrinking or over too many sweets or whatever your normal lifestyle is. I'm all for shaking it up a little bit. I will never be that stringent during the holidays, but it also begs for being mindful, saying, okay, that's enough sweets for a couple of days. Thank you very much. So bring the mindfulness back into the holidays for us as well. And I'm going to say another thing about that, Waska, is also to be mindful of our time. So if you and I are an awful lot alike, my alone time is like breath to me. If I don't get some alone time every single day, I'm not a good Beth. Like, it doesn't take long for bad Beth to come out to play if I've not had my alone time. And I think what can happen during the holidays is, let's get together for a drink, let's get together for dinner, let's get together. And the next thing you know, you're together with everybody, you know, throughout the whole week. And where has that Beth time gone? It's not pretty for me. I'll be the first one to admit it. It's not good. So to be mindful of that as well. If that's part of your routine or part of what your soul needs, that needs to continue throughout the holiday. Sure, you can overeat, you can overdrink, you can spend a lot of time with people. But if that's part of your regular routine, I would say to all of our listeners, keep that in your routine. Keep that in your routine.
We'll be right back after this.
Hey, this is Waska. Happy holiday, my friends. I know this time of year can be potentially stressful for any number of reasons. So I want to offer anyone listening the opportunity to connect with me for a complimentary discovery session. We will talk about practical ways to de-stress, be joyful, and create prosperity in your life. Reach out to me at waska@illuminatedwarrior.com. I look forward to connecting. Happy and healthy holidays. Yeah, it's interesting just to see how people go about, you know, during this holiday time. And I don't think it has to be a stressful time. I think there's a lot that goes. We often talk about, like, the past. I don't know if folks know what an engram is. And essentially, it's just, you know, it's an implanted energy, we'll say, but I'll call it an energy button for lack of a different definition. Yeah. That something happens. A lot of times it's a painful or traumatic experience, but nevertheless, it's an experience that has made an imprint on you energetically. And a week, a month, a year, two decades later, something comes up that can trigger that engram, and you're having the same feelings you had when that traumatic or that painful or whatever that experience was the first time. And right. You very often don't consciously know where it is. or where it came from. And I was just, I just had one like last night.
Yeah.
Well, the epiphany of it anyway, when I was talking to my kids, we were talking about, I asked them if they remembered, this is several years back when we were celebrating a Christmas party. So I'm a festivist dude. I'll celebrate anything. So, Ed, who is my, I call it my bonus son. I was with his mom for almost 10 years. So, they were Catholic. So we celebrated Christmas as well as Hanukkah, as well as anything else that came up
nice.
That we could celebrate.
Yeah. Nice.
So we were having a Christmas party, in Connecticut, and the whole, you know, family was there. And I want to call it Secret Santa, but it's not. But it's when you give gift, you wrap a gift and everybody puts it in, and then you pick numbers and you go around and right. So you pick a gift and then somebody could steal it from you and
right.
you know, so it's that fun. Whole thing. So
yeah.
The rules were set. I picked this this Bluetooth speaker, which I didn't have one. I actually wanted one, and I was pumped. It was cool. It looked like a little like old style radio box. And then the rules changed, and the last person who was not supposed to be able to steal anything, she decided to steal the little Bluetooth.
Speaker.
And I was like, I was really upset about it because I'm like, you know, that's cool if that's the rule, but how can you change the rule to last minute because you really want that gift, you know? So I had an engram on that, didn't realize it. So the party that I'm going to tonight, we're doing that game, that gift-giving game.
Oh.
Guess what I got as a gift to put in?
A speaker.
I got a Bluetooth speaker. Did not even realize that when I ordered it on Amazon. And last night, you know, on the Zoom call with the kids, I'm like, OMG, this is an engram. This is flashing me back to that time where I was peeved off that somebody stole my gift, you know? So I was like, this is pretty cool, you know? So how often does that happen in our lives, you know, especially around, you know, big momentous times like the holiday season where maybe we're feeling a certain way because of past events that didn't really suit our happy demeanor, you know? So I would put it out there like it's a really good time of year to just really just chill and not be reactive to things that you might even know, not even know where it's coming up because it very possibly could be from the past, and to just go in with a new fresh outlook. And even if things come up and we feel that little, you know, pinprick on our skin, like don't know what it is, just say, hey, it's all good. It's happy times. It's Festivus for the rest of us.
Right. And do you think there's value though in, well, first of all, there would be value, of course, in recognizing that when it happens. There's something jarred here. There's something that just happened here that bumped up against me, right? Let it go, Festivus for the rest of us. But do you think there's value then in taking some time later to, or to just let it pop in your head like it did for you yesterday, saying, oh, shoot, that's the same gift that caused that engram for me. Is it as good as that and that's the end of it? Or do you go back and reflect?
Yeah, that's a great question because just leaving it there would be one thing, but I absolutely am taking it a step further because I'm going to be very aware tonight during when we play this game, how it goes. And you know what? I was already thinking like, it would be pretty cool if I wound up with my own gift, right?
Yeah.
If that happens, great. If it doesn't, I've already decided I'm not going to be disappointed if somebody, whoever gets it is meant to get it. But I will be conscious of how the game goes and how I'm feeling during that game.
Brilliant.
So, yeah, I am going to take it a little step further because I do believe we have the opportunity. We get to rewrite our stories. And a big part of my work growing up was breaking those chains that I considered to be dysfunctional and didn't want to carry on those I will call them disharmonious things that I experienced, you know, with my parents, which, you know, no judgment. We all do it. I'm sure if I asked my kids or somebody else asked my kids, hey, you know, what'd your pops do that wasn't harmonious?
Was
you
cool.
know, I'm sure there's some things they come up with, you know, but at least they're different, you know, and hopefully a little less painful.
Painful. And of course, I believe that our children being raised by spiritually grounded people, I'll put it that way, like you and I. Maybe I'm just saying this to make myself feel good now that I'm saying it, but
okay.
I think they're more aware of the fact that we're trying really hard, that we're trying, it, like not really hard, but we're trying to be more mindful as parents. And so if my children do say to me sometimes, they'll say, that, you know, that's grounds for therapy when I'm 30. I'm like, yeah, that probably is. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that because I know what my intentions are. I know why I might say and do some of the things I do in parenting styles. And the rest is for them to deal with too, right? There's elements of them taking responsibility for it. But I want to take this further, a couple questions for you.
Can I ask you something first?
Yeah, go ahead.
Because you said what your intentions are. So do you set intentions around the holiday season? Because I think that's a really great thing to do for everyone.
Yes, I 100% do. Yeah, and I generally start mine, even though I'm a Canadian, I was born near the Detroit border. So I have a lot in my energy field around the United States of America. It was always a very cool, my parents would bring us over for the Thanksgiving Day parade in Detroit. And so every time the American Thanksgiving happens on the last Thursday of November, I start my happy dance. Like I start to get into the holiday spirit. I don't know. I just feel like the vibe. I watch the football and, you know, I just get into it. And on that morning, when I do my prayers and my meditations and my journaling, that's when I set my intentions for the holiday season. And they vary from year to year. Probably they're never the same if I go back and look at them over the years. But this year's intention was really wrought in joyfulness and mindfulness. So that's why I've talked about a little bit about it already in our conversation, is to be mindful and joyful, because we've had a bit of a crappy go, we all have, over the last couple of years, right? And I wanted to bring joy, more joy, instead of more fear or more angst into the holidays. So joyfulness and mindfulness for me are my two top of mind.
Beautiful. I love
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah. How about you? Do you do that as well? Do you set intentions?
Yeah, I'm not a big like New Year's resolution person. Mm-hmm. To me, that's never really worked well. I find just like with the holidays and getting back to like the gift giving, like how cool is it? Like, how do you feel when you get a gift from somebody out of the blue as adverse to the holiday time where you know you're getting a gift, and a lot of people feel like, well, I have to buy these gifts, you know. So I love, if I see something that I know somebody will like, I'll just buy it, and it doesn't have to be some big grand momentous gesture, but just to let somebody know that I'm thinking of them. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing about that. But my intention, you know, for this point in time is really just lightheartedness, just to stay lighthearted.
Nice.
And keep it even. You know, not to get triggered by things. So yeah, that's my intention for this time of year.
That's brilliant. And did you have them and explore them when your children were little, so that you wouldn't be crazy papa, or you'd be, you know, like you, with your children and how they experience the holidays?
I'm not sure what you're asking.
Oh, did you set intentions for yourself when your kids were little, saying, whatever, my intention this year is to go absolutely crazy. I'm going to spend $1,000 billion and my kids are going to have the best holiday ever from a toy standpoint. Did you do that as well?
Never spent $1,000 billion. No. There was times where they were, again, with the added to the electronics, with those little DS, they call them DSs or the Nintendo games. They were really into those. So yes, you know, that would be their big gift. And the other things would be, you know, small fun things. So there would always be like one, you know, significant gift. But I always felt that it wasn't really about so much about the gift. Of course, when you're a kid, it is about the gift. So, you know, we found like a happy medium that they would get something that they wanted, but also we wouldn't like over indulge them. So they would be spoiled. I was a big proponent of that. And really, all of them get the value of money. So they weren't spoiled, even with college, you know, I could have paid for 100% of their colleges, but I wouldn't, you know. It's like, and especially like my older one, Jonah, when he first came to me and he really expressed like, wow, you know, I see how expensive things are and I like saving money. And I see that when I save money and then I could buy something rather than just going out and buying it or expecting you to buy it. You know, he really gets the value of money and same thing. You know, the others that had those experiences, cause they say a lot of, young people who are born with a silver spoon in their mouth and they're given everything, that they don't really understand the full value of what it takes to earn the dollar, and really is kind of doing them a disservice by not giving them experience to work hard, to set their intentions, and to go out there and fulfill whatever it is to earn a living.
Yes, I totally agree. And that's isn't that the world that we live in? So I believe that their little souls, not unlike your soul and my soul, you know, we have a contract with the universe to be human. I mean, we've talked about my little dog, Ella, who's here in my office this morning. She has a little soul too, but she chose to come back as dog. And not only dog, spoiled white little dog.
She's a privileged white little dog. Oh my goodness.
She's more privileged than my children for sure. But I believe that we have an obligation to our children and for us to remember as parents that they have their own, I call it a sacred contract, your own sacred contract with your maker, with your God or your universe, whatever you want to call it. And my job is to be a conduit to that and to support that and to love you regardless, because that contract's yours. My contract's mine. And I also believe that we can't touch each other's contracts. They can't be negotiated later. As much as when times get tough for any of us, you want to look up to the heavens and go, seriously, can I not have this contract right now? But you know that you asked for it, or at least this is my belief system. I know that I asked for it. And when it's time for me to have my soulful conversation, once this body's all gone, I know the universal God is going to say to me, how did you do? How'd you do down there? Did you have a good one? Did you take care of that contract like you were supposed to? So that really helped me a lot with raising my children, because I sometimes have to put that, not a line between us, I don't mean it like that, but their soul contract and sacred contract and my sacred contract, and that we have to walk them out. We have to be with them, right? Absolutely. I have a little side story to tell about the holidays though, and how I know my daughter's going to have therapy on this one for sure. My daughter is the only girl, the granddaughter in my side of the family. So my parents have six grandsons and this is the one granddaughter. So when my little girl was born, she was princess upon princess upon princess, especially for my parents. So we would drive I lived in Toronto at the time. We would drive down to my little hometown for Christmas every year. And I brought presents, Santa presents. I brought mom and dad presents. I bought Santa presents. And when we get to my parents' house, there'd be 10,000 more presents for her. This is before my son was born. So she had 2 years before her brother was born. So they're just presents upon presents. And my parents were so excited. Like, I understand where it came from, but they were too much in her face, like too much. She had to be super excited about every single gift. And there's dozens. They took pictures, and then that was before we had smartphones, right? So my parents are in her face with the camera, and she would start to cry. She became overwhelmed, not with joy. This child was not having it from a joy standpoint. She just wanted everybody to back away. It was like an energy thing. So year after year, till she was probably 10, she would get sick at Christmas every year. Fever, ear infections, she would throw up. We'd be driving down there and she'd be sick. And no wonder.
An implanted engram, right?
Yep, 100%, 100%. So probably by the time she was 9 or 10, I realized this is not good. And she was old enough to converse well. So I remember having a conversation with her saying, talk to mama how you're feeling, what that's all about. And she was so frank and honest, even as a 10-year-old. She said, Mom, I don't want all that attention on me. I'm quieter than grandma and papa. I'm not in your face like that. And we changed the tradition. We stopped. I remember having a conversation with my parents saying, this has got to stop. She's not comfortable. I know you love her and I know you think this is a really cool thing, but we have to honor her. And she gave me the biggest hug when she found out that I had said that to her grandparents. I said it with love. I wasn't there to hurt them, but I have to protect my child and honor her request. Otherwise I could have been horrible mom and said, I don't care what you think. We're going down to grandma papa's and it's important to them that they give you all these gifts and you have to take all the attention. No,
yeah.
Yep. So I can imagine. I'm going to talk to her about that. Actually, I'll see her over the holidays.
Let me guess. How she started feeling much better. She didn't have that reaction.
100%. 100%. And she's getting ready to be married. And
Mazel tov.
Yeah. Thank you. Even her wedding plans are this. Are a little more subdued, just as festive. Like it's gonna be awesome, but she just doesn't want the big flash and dash and Instagram and Facebook and all that. She and her fiance were gonna have a really pleasant, lovely, awesome wedding, and that's exactly what she wants. And I promised her when they got engaged and we started the wedding planning process, because I'm a pretty good party planner. And she talked me down off the ledge a little bit and said, Mom, we're going to handle it our way. We love and support, and we need your love and support, but this is the way the wedding is going to go down. And I said, totally cool. So I learned. So there's an example of her being very, very little and me probably not paying attention as much as I could have, being mindful around what my child needs to, you know, she's in her late 20s now, to completely understanding. I think it's awesome that they're doing it their own way. So I don't know if she can reverse that engram. I know that we talked about being able to reverse them, and I believe you can. I don't know how much work, like she has her own spiritual mentor and stuff. I don't know how much work she's done around that, but she seems to be in a really good place. I'm feeling a little bit better that maybe I didn't totally mess her up.
Oh, I'm sure you didn't. And a lot of it from your perspective as the parent, and also from her perspective of removing or healing that engram, is the mindfulness that we talk about, and the awareness. So you were aware enough to say, hey, you know, Mom and Dad, this is not really great for her. She's getting upset by it. And, you know, so that changed things right there. And now, you know, she was aware enough, even as a little girl, to say, hey, this doesn't feel good. And even if it comes up now, especially if she's doing her own spiritual work and knew back then that's where it came from, then if indeed she is aware of it and she's mindfully saying, okay, I could change this story, I am changing this story, I get to live the life and feel the way I want to feel, then I do believe that those engrams dissolve away. And that's how we break those change or those multi-generational things that just keep perpetuating from generation to generation, if we don't do that work. So I think it's really important to, mm-hmm. once you acquire that awareness, to apply it to, okay, I see what this is. There is a way to change it. There's a way to heal it. There's a way to move forward and illuminate it. And then you have broken those chains and you can live a much happier, healthier life.
100%. So I'm thinking about you with your Illuminated Warrior work. You correct me if I'm wrong, but it must be a very big and significant part of your work, because people who have experienced trauma, and probably all of us have in some way, shape or form, choose to not look at it. Very common. Yes. Choose to suppress it. Of course, very, very common, because it's unnerving to look at it. It's hard to look at it. It's painful to look at it, of course. And for me, and for the work that I do with my clients, they're afraid to look at it, because what if I have to say something nasty about my father or my mother or my grade one teacher and we're not supposed to, of course, I don't agree with this at all, but you're not supposed to do that. But if you're engaged in a supportive and loving environment, which is what you do so beautifully with the work that you do, it's easier. It may be not less fearful, but it's easier, because they know that they're surrounded by love and support, and ain't nothing going to happen to you as a result of venting, right? If anything, it'll be better for you. Ain't nothing bad going to happen to you, right? You'll be supported and you'll be relieved from that. What do you think? What do you say about that?
Yeah, great points. It does get easier the more that you put yourself out there. It's difficult to take that first step, you know, to jump off that cliff into the unknown of what kind of reaction is waiting for me, what kind of response might be there. But, you know, the saying goes that the 1,000-mile journey begins with the first footstep. So we have to take that first footstep. And, You know, yes, a lot of times there is fear. I mean, I went through that a lot myself. I was very introverted when I was young, and I kept my throat chakra very, very closed. I absorbed it all. And I had, and I'm sure I still do have some engrams, things that tweak me from not being my own advocate. You know, I mean, my parents did the best that they could. They weren't real big advocates. My mom, more so. My dad was working and drinking and doing his thing. You know, my mom was a little bit more aware and did her best to, you know, find me friends, took me to my ball games and get me out of my shell. But, you know, as I got older, I think I might have mentioned this in a previous show, and I mentioned it in this show about my voice. So I forced myself to take a public speaking class, and I brought my guitar in, and, you know, I did my thing, and I just let it go. I was sweating bullets, because, like, hey, these people were in my class. They were cool. They were, some of them were friends already, but I was so fearful.
No kidding.
So I did that, and then I did it in college. I took an acting class just to get out in front of people and be seen, even though it made me so, so uncomfortable, didn't like it. And you wouldn't know from today, because I'm very verbose, I'm very outgoing. I was the 180 degree opposite of that. So I learned to just embrace who I am. And if people don't like me, they don't like me. That's their choice. That's their stuff. And I have to love me first. So in that, it's taking that step into, again, the unknown and facing our fears. And it's hard for me a lot of times, because I did go through this evolutionary process. When I work with guys who are aware of what's going on, but they're, again, either with the fear, they're afraid to do it, or even more so, they take that step and they make some progress, but then they take two steps or more backwards. And I've worked with a lot of guys who are in recovery, whether it's alcohol or you know, chemical substances, whatever it is. And it hurts my heart. Part of the work for me is not to be attached to it, because I do my best service just being there as what they call the hollow bone or the empty vessel, just to be there to witness and to support in the best way that I can. But it does affect my heart when I see a guy going backwards. And usually what happens is, which is happening with more than one of the guys in the group now, they disappear. You know, they go into their cocoon, but not in the cocoon where they are preparing to break out, like out of that chrysalis, like the butterfly, like we've spoken about before. They go into the cocoon of isolation, of even depression and all. And that's very difficult. It's difficult for them. It's difficult for me as their mentor and supporter and brother, because there's really nothing that I could do other than hold that space until they're ready to come out, until they're ready to say, hey, bro, I need some help. I need some support. And a lot of them do, but, you know, some of them don't do that until they're ready, or some of them don't do it for, I've had it for years. Guys will come back to me like, oh my God, you know, I missed this work. I'm like, beautiful, welcome home. You know, come on back into the fold and let's work together. And I don't know if that happens with women as much, because I do work primarily with men, but it's guys are, I want to say, really sensitive, and women are very sensitive also, but guys are a lot more sensitive than I think a lot of women realize, in the sense that they're not used to emoting the way many women are. They're not used to sharing the way women are raised and innately are. And when they do, they feel more vulnerable. So putting themselves out there is challenging. So that's why, like, when I talk to even like the partners of guys, I'm like, you know, just be there and listen to him and hold the space and hear what he's saying, because a lot of times it's hard for guys to just even say what they're feeling, you know. So for their partner to support them in that, and just like, you know, women, like, also, you want the commiseration and you want the acceptance, you want the acknowledgement and the validation. Guys need that as well. So, I mean, I could ask you, how many guys in your life that you've known, whether husband, brother, boyfriend, partners, you know, nephews, whatever, were not great communicators?
Oh, 100%. I know, Veer, I can count on less than one hand. And most of the gentlemen, the people, the male figures that I know who do, have had to work damn hard at it.
So there's been a lot.
There's nothing natural about it at all. They work damn hard at getting that throat chakra activated and make sure that they're expressing themselves appropriately. Damn hard. Like, it's hard. It's hard. Yeah. So I completely understand where you're coming from. Wow. Yeah.
Most of us weren't raised that way. Like part of the work that we do is we look at our relationships with our dads. You know, some guys haven't even had relationships with their dads for various reasons. I've told story ad nauseum. I grew up in the alcoholic family. And again, when I say that, I mean no disrespect. My dad up there, he knows it now. He realizes it. Maybe it sounded like that in the beginning. But I let go of any anger, any resentment a long time ago. And this is the story that he lived, that he even said he chose to live. And I was, I think, in my 50s. It took me to my 50s, maybe a little bit younger. I'm not great with time, to realize that my dad lived the life he lived because of the loss that he suffered when he was almost 13 years old. So right before his bar mitzvah, he fell asleep in bed with his dad, and he woke up, his dad was dead. Okay? Yeah. How do you ever get over that? So when I realized my dad really is a man boy, he never progressed past 13. Oh. He was a grown man in the body of a 13-year-old and the mindset of a 13-year-old. And when I realized that, which really was true, I had to forgive him and forgive myself for feeling the way I felt about him, because I thought about that. What if he passed away, you know, at such a young age? What a horrible experience to carry with you. And he did carry it with him like every day. So I think if we take the time and look at our relationships and not be judgmental and as they say, you know, walk in somebody else's shoes before you make those judgments, then I think it's a lot easier, especially now around the holiday time. We could, you know, the people who might tweak us when we get together, say, hey, you know, let me walk in their shoes, at least for today, at least for this gathering, at least for this holiday season. And find that compassion, because isn't that really what it's all about? What Jesus said, what Allah said, what Buddha said, what they all said, you know, do unto others and spread the love. So
that's exactly
right.
Let's do it. But I'm thinking about what the proverbial blessing your father's journey was for you. Because look at the beautiful work you're doing as a result of witnessing that. So God bless your father in that respect, even with all the trauma. I think that's really brilliant, because your father clearly didn't have Awaska. He didn't have a spiritual mentor, someone he could reach out to, right? So well, probably a lot of shame, a lot of guilt, a lot of lots of stuff, I'm sure, floating around for your father. But that's one of his legacies. Is to have lived that very painful life, and therefore my son Wasco or Perry doesn't have to. In fact, you're doing the polar opposite.
You're
helping.
We'll be right back after this.
Hey, this is Wasco. Happy holiday, my friends. I know this time of year can be potentially stressful for any number of reasons, so I want to offer anyone listening the opportunity to connect with me for a complimentary discovery session. We will talk about practical ways to de-stress, be joyful, and create prosperity in your life. Reach out to me at wasca@illuminatedwarrior.com. I look forward to connecting. Happy and healthy holidays.
Did you have some Wascas in your life? Did you have some spiritual mentors in your life that really helped you with that forgiveness process? Because I bet you it was probably cranked up around the holidays too.
Not when I was real young. I was just in survival mode when I was real young. So when I did finally gain some awareness, I started studying Tai Chi and Qigong and meditation and yoga and all that, and came upon a number of different mentors that really helped me to ground myself and to really accept who I was and to shed away any shame or blame and practice forgiveness and gratitude. And, you know, I've spoke about a lot of the Native American connections and friends that I've had in the past. I love their traditional philosophies, especially like ensuring the next seven generations is one of them. It's not exclusive to them, but that's one of what they're very well known for, to make sure that in seven generations, not in one generation, not in two, it's seven generations, we are leaving for that generation whatever it is, clean air, fresh water, a society where we is built upon like love and compassion and equanimity rather than kind of like what we're seeing now. So that's something that's true to my heart. So a lot of those mentors and wisdom keepers that I got to document and sit with and share spiritual connections with really helped me to grow into who I am today. So I think it's just really important for each of us to get in touch with our own selves and to know thyself, because if you don't know who you are, if you don't know who Beth is, if I don't know who Wasco or Perry is, then, you know, we're very easily manipulated and turned in directions that may not suit our highest and best. So I think that's really the most important work. And that's, you know, the primary work I do with the guys is like, know yourself. Okay. So when you're in a relationship, ask yourself those questions, you know. I may have brought this into this show before, I don't know, an acronym that I made up, you know. Am I sure? I don't know if we talked.
No, I don't think so. Yeah, explain.
I'll throw it out there again. So am I sure? S-U-R-E. So the S is, am I safe? And that comes from being a dad, I think, you know, safety first. So ask myself, am in this situation, especially not exclusively for men, but especially for women, if you're with somebody who may be aggressive, violent, whatever, am I safe? So that's one example. So the U is, am I understood? You know, I didn't want to be in a relationship, especially a romantic one, like if somebody didn't understand me. And it goes with any relationship. The R is, am I respected? Also, am I being responsible? And the E is, am I feeling empowered? So those are the questions I ask myself. Am I sure? You know, whatever the relationship is. And if they all are yes, then okay, it's a two thumbs up, go ahead. If one, two, or more are not, then I have to say, okay, why am I even pursuing this relationship, or what needs to, you know, change, evolve, be looked at to continue?
Right. So that's brilliant for starters. That's amazing. I hope that's written down somewhere on your website or something or something.
It's
or something.
Not, but I work with the guys with it.
Oh, okay. Okay. It's brilliant. That's excellent. And I'm seeing that you could take that though. You could take that right into your relationship with your bank manager, for gosh sakes.
Absolutely.
You could, like any kind of relationship. Yeah. What do you do? So my eyes are going all over the place because I'm getting a lot of guidance right now. They're asking me a lot of questions. So that's why I'm not looking you in the eye. I'm just getting stuff. And our hawks are back, by the way. This has happened more than once when you and I are chatting.
Affirmations, yay.
If one of those S-U-R-E's is not existent in a relationship, can one of them, and I'm just throwing this out for the sake of this conversation, if one of them is only at a 50% level, and the rest of them are really good and solid, do you generally carry on with that relationship? Or if they're not all nice and full, the relationship's off? What does that look like for you?
I use it as a barometer. So it's not like an absolute either way. But if I feel like, okay, I don't feel understood here, then I will work on that. Even if it's 50%, 20%, 80%, if it could be better and improved, then I'll bring that into the conversation. Like, hey, okay, you know, did you actually hear what I said? Can you tell me what I said? How can we communicate better? Or if I don't feel respected, that's a big one for me. Obviously, all of them are big. If I don't feel safe, that the number one is, if I don't feel safe, I'm out of there. That's the rest don't even matter, because if I don't feel safe, I'm probably not going to be respected, understood, or empowered. So, you know, so it's just really taking them as they come and asking those questions. And really, as we've spoken about before, the feelings, how do I feel around this relationship, around this person? And if I don't feel safe, understood, respected, empowered, responsible, then I will check in with myself. Where do I feel it in my body? You know, and that's where the chakra work that I do with the guys comes in also. You know, am I feeling it in my heart? Is my heart closed? Is it in my shoulders? You know, am I holding tension? Where am I holding tension? And what can I do to relieve that? So it's all energetic. Awesome. Yeah.
And you know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking of how you could eat. I'm taking this with me for my holidays. Just
excellent.
Just
so I invite everybody to. Yeah,
we have several family gatherings, like most people do, and I have been in situations sitting around the family dinner table, and everybody's relatively enjoying themselves. It's a good time. And then one crazy badass relative will say something that you know, makes you go, oh my God.
We gotta have one of those, right? Everybody's gotta have one of those.
Yep. And then I feel it in my body too, because I'm very energetically aware of what's going on inside of me. And I'll just feel this awful, awful feeling. And the only way I get through it, I'm going to use that S-U-R-E though. This is great. The only way I get through it is through deep breaths. First of all, the recognition. So I recognize whatever was just said, change the energy in the room. And this is not as good as it was 5 minutes ago. And I'll become aware of it. I'll feel it in my body. And usually for me, it's a tightening in my solar plexus. That's my spot. And I have trained myself in a good way over the years for a lot of deep breaths. Keep my big mouth shut, because that can get me into all kinds of humanistic trouble. So when that happens, I just breathe a lot of deep, deep, deep breaths. And I don't do this often, but I will do it under those circumstances. I remember that this is just a moment in time. And sure enough, and soon enough, we'll be in the car, you know, going home or whatever, and that will be complete.
Beautiful.
So there's no need for Beth to get her shorts in a knot and get all involved in it and open her big mouth and do anything about it. Just remember, I don't literally do this, but I like to put my hands over my heart. So in my mind, I put my hands over my heart, I deep breathe and say, this is a snapshot in time. And soon enough, we'll be in the car going home, and that will be a complete dinner. That dinner will be complete.
I love it.
Yeah, I don't like to do that future thing very often, but under those circumstances, I do, because I try to stay mindful in the moment. But I envision myself just being in the car, thinking to myself, "You handled it well, Beth. You did it very well for yourself," kind of thing. And you have to just allow it, right?
So I love that. That's great. That's a great lesson for everybody. Yeah, yeah. So as we're coming to the top of the hour here, I'm going to give myself a little shout out. Okay.
Do.
So, well, because this is a really fun thing. You know, for those who have listened, I've been doing television production forever. So coming out on Christmas on the 24th is a movie that I worked on. It's called Don't Look Up. It's on Netflix. So it's going to be in the theaters, I think, on December 10th or 14th. But it's going to premiere on the 24th on Netflix. It's called Don't Look Up. It's got a star-studded cast. It's Leonardo DiCaprio, Jennifer Lawrence, Meryl Streep, Ariana Grande, Cate Blanchett, and yours truly. Well, this is the funny part. Okay, so I was hired as one of the cameramen, so you'll see my handiwork in there. You won't know my shots, but anyway, they hired me also as a background actor, as a camera operator. So I'm sure it'll be out of focus, or, you know, you may see the back of my head behind my camera. Maybe you'll see me. So more so than the camera work, I'm looking forward to seeing if I actually see myself in the background. So have some fun with that, peeps. You know, if you see me, give a shout out and let me know.
I love it. I have, as spiritual as I am, I have severe celebrity-itis. If I see a celebrity, or now you're going to be one of them. Now I'm going to have to be all starstruck in front of you too. I fall for all that stuff. I just love it. I just think it's so, so amazing. Well, congratulations.
Thank you. Well, I've been working with doing this forever. So I've met so many famous people over the last decade. So I've got a million stories for another time. But so, my friend, for the holiday, what do you want to wish everybody in closing?
Oh, I wish everyone so many heartfelt moments of love and joy. I'll go back to my intention for my holiday season is to be mindful and to be joyful and to be almost super mindful of taking care of yourself during these times. To my point of what I said at the beginning, if Beth doesn't have Beth time, alone time, it's not pretty. So why would I put myself through that? I'm mindful that I make sure that those ducks are in order, that I tick those boxes, because if my gas tank's nice and full, my spiritual gas tank is nice and full, then that crazy ass relative who's going to say something that'll drive me nuts doesn't bother me as much. It doesn't bother me as much. So I think of during the holidays, especially, and I wish this for everyone, keep your spiritual gas tank nice and full. Nice and full. That's the best thing that you can give to yourself, the best gift you can give to yourself. And that will make the whole season that much more joyous. So that's my take. How about you? Got something to say for everybody?
Well, I love that. Yeah. So what I would say is, first of all, thank you, my friend, for joining me in this holiday episode that we're doing. It's always
my pleasure. It's great.
Yeah, and for all of the audience and all, really just taking what we're saying here to heart, and just to honor each of our own hearts. And I think, or I should say, I feel it, when we do that, it really sets an example for everyone around us, because there's plenty of stories that I could share at a later time. Just energetically, when I change my mindset and I open my heart to especially people that in the past have tweaked me, pissed me off, whatever it is, angered me, that it just changes the whole dynamic. So I would put that out there. You know, let's just all just, as I always say, illuminate our paths with love and kindness. And that's what it means. Just be open-hearted, outstretched arms, and really, not to get into the whole religious aspect, but really, what did the great masters say? What did Jesus say? What did Buddha say? Well, what did they all say? Is to embrace each other as we want to be embraced. You know, so let's spread the love. Let's illuminate those hearts one jingle at a time. You know, and get under that mistletoe and yeah, suck some face. Yeah.
So happy holidays. Happy holidays, everybody.
Happy holidays. Festivus for the rest of us.
Love it.
Be well. We'll tune back in next year. See you then.
Take care. Lots of love.
Visit illuminatedwarrior.com if you'd like to go deeper and find out more about what's available within the Illuminated Warrior Men's Transformational Community. Tune in next time for more candid conversations for men and women about men on the Way of the Illuminated Warrior Talk Show, every Thursday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Until next time, illuminate your path with loving kindness.